The views expressed on the following broadcasts do not necessarily reflect those of KHLT, Take 12 Radio, or our affiliates. The opinions on this show should not be considered as medical, psychological, or professional advice and are those of the host, co-host, and guest. Take 12 Radio and KHLT Recovery Broadcasting are not affiliated with any particular 12-step fellowship.
One day at a time with its failures and fears. Portion of pain and burden of care, we must meet.
Welcome to Walking Through the Language of the Heart, a journey into the grapevine writings of Alcoholics Anonymous co-founder Bill W. And now, here are your co-hosts, Chris S. and the Monty Man.
Well, welcome back, one and all, to another episode of this broadcast with Chris S. as we walk through the book, The Language of the Heart, and we're flipping the page, literally, to a whole new piece in this book. What are we doing, Chris?
Well, we've moved into part three, and part three covers essays from 1958 to 1970. So this is, I believe, the last part of the book, which, you know, we've been at this quite a while, Monty, well over a year.
Yeah. Can you believe it? Wow.
Listen, I've learned so much. I don't know about you, but when we do these podcasts, really we really dig into this more so, and we get deeper into it than if you just read it. You know?
Yeah.
We're going to discuss it and everything. And what I'm going to start on tonight, this is page 231, is there's an introduction to part three that was not written by Bill Wilson, but we'll get through that, and then we'll talk about the greatest gift of all. So stay tuned.
Yeah.
Okay, by 1961, when Bill announced his final retirement from leadership in AA, he believed that he had completed all the major tasks he needed to do for the fellowship. In his talk to the 1961 General Service Conference, see again at the crossroads, page 324, Bill emphasized the importance of the principle of rotation and the need for him to step down as a leader and let AA's group conscience operate. While declaring his intention to move to the sidelines in AA, he also expressed his desire to continue writing for the grapevine. You know, Monty, we've talked a few times about the principle of rotation. And,
yeah.
And I, like a lot of these principles, I believe it's a spiritual principle. And I have some experience with this. I started with a bunch of my sponsees. I started a big book meeting in our area in 1997. It was like December of 97, and it was unlike any meeting that had in the North Jersey area. It was a big book workshop meeting where literally someone would teach out of the book Alcoholics Anonymous about, you know, what it meant, what the steps were, how to do them, you know, really get in depth with the big book. And I held on to the leadership teaching position in this meeting for about 2 years. And it really started to bug me that I was continuing to do it. And, you know, I passed it on to someone you might know, Barefoot Bill,
yeah,
and then some other people, and it went on from there. But there was something inside me that told me it was going to be dangerous if I held on, you know, Chris's meeting,
mm-hmm,
where Chris teaches. And what we did was we put a steering committee together, and I wasn't on the steering committee, right? Because if I would have been on the steering committee, everybody would, well, Chris, what do you think? What do you think? So I divorced myself from the management and the running of that meeting because I just knew inside it was the right thing to do. You understand what I'm talking about?
Yeah. So let me dig into your. I'm sure that Chris S. has a couple of character defects left. I know I do. So let me dig into that a little bit. Was it difficult for you? Was there a part of you, part of your ego maybe, that found that challenging to actually let go of, or did it come pretty easy?
It was challenging. I knew I had to do it and I did it.
Yeah.
But then I was kind of the unspoken sheriff for a while.
Yeah.
You know, like what did they do? I was second guessing a lot of stuff. but that was a period of time where I just had to believe in the second tradition, which is God is directing all this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You know, mm-hmm. and God did direct it for about 20 years until it served its purpose and it kind of disbanded.
Sure.
You know, very slowly, but what it had done was it spawned many, many meetings that were very much like it in other areas, and the need for it wasn't as great anymore. But was it hard? Yeah, listen, an ego is a tricky thing. I believe my ego was attached, but I just knew. I just knew that it would be bad for me to continue in that position. And so I think Bill felt the same thing with Alcoholics Anonymous.
Sure.
You know, this was his baby. And, you know, in 1961, that was a long time after Alcoholics Anonymous was formed. But I think he knew that he needed to step back and let the thing live its own life.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, anyway.
All right. Thanks for your transparency.
Yeah. One primary channel of communication still stands wide open: my writing for the Grapevine. This I would certainly like to continue. Just now, for example, I'm doing a series of articles entitled Practicing These Principles in All Our Affairs. Maybe these pieces can later be expanded into a full-size book, which would try to deal with the whole problem of living as seen by us AAs. If it turns out that I can write it, such a volume might be of permanent value. There's a couple of things. You know, next week we're going to talk about one thing, Monty, where there was a couple of things where Bill really thought we were going to move into an area that we kind of didn't move into, mm-hmm. at least on his timeline. He had very, very high hopes for the spiritual development of the Alcoholics Anonymous movement. And some of the things that he thought were going to happen didn't. And next week we'll especially talk about that.
Yeah.
There is another factor that bears upon my decision. Like every AA member, I have a definite responsibility to become a citizen of the world around me. Therefore, I'm already exploring certain areas of outside activity in which I may be able to make a helpful and possibly meaningful contribution. I believe he's talking about his niacin vitamin B therapy. He got really into that in the late 50s, early 60s, and I really saw that as something that was going to help alcoholics. It didn't really pan out. That's one of the things that didn't really pan out. Among those areas of outside activity were a return in a limited fashion to work on Wall Street and pursuit of an interest in the niacin therapy. There he goes. He talks about the full-size book Bill hoped to write was never completed, partially because of his increasing outside involvement and also because his emphysema, which was growing worse as the 1960s progressed. He smoked like a steam locomotive, as many people did in the 60s, because there were television commercials where doctors would recommend cigarettes as being good for your throat.
I know. Yeah.
Three articles, pages 251, 254, and 259, were introduced in the Grapevine as parts of a series on practicing these principles in all our affairs. No other articles were earmarked for the book, though much of the material reprinted here deals explicitly with its theme. I wonder what book he was talking about. Obviously, the 12 Steps and 12 Traditions had been printed by 1961. AA Comes of Age, I think, was published by then or shortly thereafter. I wonder what book he was talking about. Maybe he was going to go deeper into the spiritual world, as he has in some of these articles we've read.
Now, who published As Bill Sees It? That's an AA publication, true?
Yes.
Yes. When did that come out?
I'm not sure when it was published, but it's a combination of stuff from the Big Book and stuff from the Grapevine articles.
Yeah.
It's like greatest hits.
Yes.
And it's certainly a good book for promoting discussion. Mm-hmm. Topical discussion. I like discussion meetings where the person doesn't start by saying, "Does anybody have a problem?
Oh, I know.
Or, would anyone like to share on anything at all?" I actually like discussion meetings where there's some kind of
direction,
formula, some kind of guardrail. Because I don't know about you, Monty, but I've been in some meetings where if you don't have any guardrails, you're going in the
pit. Man, I bite my lip when I hear a chairperson say, "Well, I guess what I'll do is open up the daily reflections and we'll just go with that." I'm like, oh, Lord.
Yeah.
I mean, there's no preparation. There's no planning. But then again, sometimes I've seen God do some pretty wonderful things in meetings even like that.
Yeah. I have seen. Before we get going in all our affairs, I'm going to tell a quick story, and I just couldn't believe this. And I'm as guilty as the people I'm going to be criticizing, right? Because
yeah.
I sat in that meeting too. But we had, in the Northeast, we have what's known as Booker's meetings. And what that means is, at 5 in the morning, you get up and you go to a parking lot in like Jersey City, somebody that's lending us their industrial parking lot. And every single speaker meeting known to man goes there and holds up big signs like the Belleville Serenity Group or, the Newark Young Peoples or whatever. And as far as the eye can see, there are groups, bookers, holding up these signs. And you just go around and you trade commitments. Like, well, I'm from the Burnsville Sunday Night Group. I'll come to you if you come to me. And by like 7 in the morning, you've booked the entire quarter for your speaker meeting. Now, what happens is they put those commitments in a book and they pass them around the meeting and you can sign up for a commitment. You saw 3 people sign up. There's a leader and 2 speakers usually, right? And so we had this person who was obviously challenged in every way you could be challenged, who really didn't belong in the meeting, but was sent there by some well-meaning professional, right? She was not ready for prime time. And anyway, what she did was she signed up for every single commitment in the book.
Oh, no.
And because she signed up, nobody else signed up because they didn't want to have anything to do with it, right? So for a whole quarter, she had her mother drive her around, and she spoke at all these meetings for an hour because there's nobody else to speak with her. And she was talking about this imaginary affair she was having with a Backstreet Boy. People were calling us up and going, "What did you just do to us? Who did you send to us?" No one in the group is in charge. No one in the group is responsible.
Oh, my gosh.
Come on, guys. There are no owners of AA. They're but trusted servants. But as a servant, we trust you to try to keep something like that from happening,
Oh, my gosh. That is great. Do they still do that?
Oh, yeah. Bookers is everywhere.
Like, really?
Some of us who started booking hour-long, speaker meetings with really good speakers, that was unheard of. And it really raised a lot of eyebrows. Who do they think they are? Why aren't they going to Bookers? Well, because I've been to so many Booker speaker meetings that you know, I've got suicidal ideation. you know what I mean? I really want to hear a message of depth and weight. I want to hear some experience, strength, and hope.
Yeah.
And I don't apologize for that. You know what I mean? So, but you know, I never ever criticize
anything. No, of course not. Oh, that's a great story. I love it.
All right. So this is segment one in all our affairs. The greatest gift of all, December 1957. Let's see what he wants to call the greatest gift of all. The greatest gift that can come to anybody is a spiritual awakening. Without a doubt, this would be the certain verdict of every well-recovered alcoholic in AA's entire fellowship. So then, what is this spiritual awakening, this transforming experience? How can we receive it, and what does it do? This is going to be interesting, Brian. To begin with, a spiritual awakening is our means of finding sobriety. And to us of AA, sobriety means life itself. We know that a spiritual experience is the key to survival from alcoholism, and that for most of us, it is the only key. We must awake or we die. So we do awake, and we are sober. Then what? In sobriety, all that we are to expect of a spiritual is sobriety. All that we're to expect from a spiritual awakening. Again, the voice of AA speaks up. No, sobriety is only a bare beginning. It is only the first gift of the first awakening. If more gifts are to be received, our awakening has to go on. And if it does go on, we find that bit by bit we can discard the old life, the one that did not work, for a new life that can and does work under any condition whatever, regardless of worldly success or failure, regardless of pain or joy, regardless of sickness or health, or even death itself. A new life of endless possibilities can be lived if we're willing to continue our awakening. That's really an interesting paragraph. You know, personally, I see a spiritual awakening as simple as this. I wake up. You know, until I've had a spiritual awakening, I'm walking around asleep thinking I'm awake.
Yeah.
And what does it mean to wake up? It means to see things as they really are. To go from a dream state where it's really not real, the perspective and perception is off, to actually seeing things as they are and putting things in proper proportion. You know, that's personally the way I see a spiritual awakening. And he's basically saying the spiritual awakening is ongoing and organic. You know, it's a process.
I think within Christendom, they would call that the sanctification process. It's ongoing, continuing to grow in your relationship with the Creator.
Sure. And much like Christianity, some people on the altar are transformed.
Yes.
And some people have to spend years and years and years in church to develop their faith system, you know, in a different way. The same kind of thing can happen, I think, with alcoholics.
Well, and you know what happens? I think you have some people that you have almost a white light experience, maybe not literally, but something close to that, like Bill had. And those people stick around to be of service and see where they can benefit those that are coming in. And then you have those that it is a long, drawn out, for whatever reason, and they keep coming because they're constantly learning, sometimes quickly, sometimes slowly, right?
Yeah.
So you know, I came to a place where the light bulb experience, if you will, that came on for me was a couple years into coming to meetings when I could not understand why I couldn't stay sober. I thought I was doing everything I was told to do. And then I had that experience that was definitely spiritual. It was a still small voice, not audible, but it was that contact with my Creator that said, when you stop depending on your prayers and start depending on the one you're praying to, you'll stay sober. When you stop depending on the steps and start depending on the one the steps are pointing you to, you'll stay sober. And it was like, wow, why didn't I think of that? Well, because I didn't.
That's why we come to believe.
Yeah, and that's what happens. Yeah, and then everything changed.
Yeah, that is really, really so true. So soon after he entered AA, a certain newcomer approached me and he said, "I'm sober and it's mighty near a miracle. I admitted that I was licked, came to a few meetings, began to get honest with myself and my sponsor. Then that awful urge for a drink suddenly left me. There's been no more booze fighting. The desire for alcohol has simply evaporated, and I can't yet understand just why or just how. Here in AA, the folks are wonderful. They care and they understand. It's a brand new world to me. But," continued Mr. Newcomer, "I'm still plumb puzzled. I don't see just how this God business fits into practical living. And when they talk about a new life for an old one, I can't take it all in. Sure enough, I'm sober, and that's new. But now that I've gone ex-grog, what's the matter with trying to live my old life? That was okay until the liquor got me. I was going places. I was on the way to making my pile. Things weren't too bad at home either until my wife yelled that she'd had enough of me and left. All I need is sobriety, and AA can keep on giving me that. Now I can go about my business. I'm sure I can make a better job of it this time." 4 years later, I ran across that same newcomer. "Well, Joe," said I, "have you made your pile yet? Did your wife come back?" With a half smile, Joe looked at me steadily and replied, "No, Bill, nothing of the kind happened. For a whole year, I had the devil of a time. How I stayed sober was more of a miracle than getting sober in the first place. I had to make that pile and get her back, or else I was going to be miserable. And miserable I certainly was. But little by little, I woke up to the possibility that God hadn't put me on earth for the purpose of getting all the money, prestige, and romance I could lay my hands on. I finally had to face the fact that I would have to settle for less, a lot less, and if I couldn't accept this, I'd probably get drunk again. So I quit giving lip service to AA's serenity prayer and really began to use it. Over and over I kept saying, 'God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference.' As I slowly learned acceptance, my pain subsided. I began to wake up and look around. I began to see my modest job was a means of living and of serving society. The bigger and the better job could no longer be my chief aim. Then I looked at AA. What had I done for the fellowship that had saved my life? Mighty little, I had to confess. So I began to go to meetings with a very different attitude. I quit my envy of financially well-heeled AAs and listened closely to what they said. I learned that their money was no longer a symbol of prestige. It was a trust for the best use of which it could be put. They also showed me that the temptation of riches could sometimes be worse than the pains of poverty." Wow.
Mm.
"The temptations of riches can be worse than the pains of poverty."
Amen.
I never heard that before. "I also found that there was no such thing as an unfortunate AA. That is, if he were a real member. If sick he was, by fine example and inspiration to those both sick and well. If poor in pocket, he could often be rich in spirit, an eager worker and servant for our society." You know, that really is true. What I see is I see this individual as having the miracle of a shift of perception.
Yeah.
A shift of perception, just starting to see things with a different pair of glasses. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah.
And I'm part of a group that I've been going to a beginner's meeting for 35 years, right? And in this beginner's meeting, you really get to see the shift. The perspective of the newcomer is all self-focused to the point of trauma. Hmm. And you start to see if someone is doing their job, you start to see that shift in perception. And you start to see that acceptance. And you start to see that awakening.
Yeah.
And you start to see somebody who's living so much better of a life. And I think that's truly the treatment for alcoholism. You know, the treatment for alcoholism will bring about you know, a lot of peace of mind and that change in perspective.
I think one of the most amazing lives that I saw change perspective and go a different direction was a young lady years ago. They came into a meeting and she could not stay sober for life depended on it. But she was quick to try and convert everybody to see things the way she saw them spiritually. She was real quick to do that in every meeting. And I would, every time she shared, I was thinking, oh, I would be embarrassed for her because I knew what was coming, right? Because we didn't, this particular meeting didn't have the most mature servants there either. So they would really rip on her. But she, you know what the thing was? She kept coming. She kept coming and she kept preaching and she kept getting knocked down for it, but she still kept coming. And after about 5 or 6 years of this, I noticed that the preaching got less and her face softened and there was just something about her. Now she's still kind of mouthy and that kind of stuff, but it's different now. Well, now fast forward probably 20 years or so, she's going to Uganda to help orphanages. She's the first person to show up and help set up, the last person to leave and tear down. She doesn't try to convert anybody. She's just very humble. But you know what? She stayed. She stuck it out. Nobody chased her away, and she stuck it out. And she absolutely amazes me. That's amazing stuff, man.
You know, I love to see that change because, you know, we're so damaged we don't think we're damaged sometimes. we're the worst drivers on the road, and we're like, get in and come with me,
right?
You know, it really is bizarre. That's why we perplex psychiatrists,
right?
You know, they don't know what to do with it. But when you see that change, you know, there's an individual today. Oh my God, he used to drive me crazy in AA. His way of dealing with AA was so counter to anything I believed in. And yet we've remained really good friends for 35 years. And I got a chance to see him a couple of weeks ago. It was great. It was great to see him, you know. Well, we're going to be friends for life. But,
yeah.
But, you know, we disagreed on so much. And we agree on so much today.
Yeah,
it's just a shift in the way you see things.
It's amazing. You know, the things that she would say, she wasn't wrong in what she said. It was the delivery of it. And there wasn't any credibility at the time. But now she doesn't have to say it and everybody listens to her. You know, I'm so stinking proud of this gal. Yeah, it's so cool.
Very, very good. I now see that awakening and growing is something that never needs stop, and that growing pains are never to be feared, provided I am willing to learn the truth about myself from them. Mm. Wow, that's a powerful little paragraph.
Yep.
The other day, an old-time AA gave me an example, which I'll never forget. Jack is a real old-timer. In fact, he started AA in my town. I used to envy him because he was a millionaire. They told me he was in our local hospital, deathly sick and about to die. In a way, I hated to go there. It would be so sad. When I walked into the room, it was filled with AAs, all in a happy mood. They were happy because Jack was happy. He was telling funny drinking stories, now and then wiping away at the blood that ran down his chin from a cancerous mouth. He sat upright, his legs and bare feet hanging from the edge of the bed. A nurse came in, remonstrating, begging him to lie down. Waving her away, he said, if I lie down flat on this bed, I might die now. And that would be too bad because I want to go to our AA state convention next week.
Oh, man. Wow.
I'm gonna stop right here, Monty. So someone passed 2 nights ago who I became close to. I've told you my office is in a 10-bed inpatient hospice. I'm a facility manager for a hospice business, and I've brought AA in there. Okay.
Yeah.
And when I find out someone is an alcoholic or is an AA, guess what? They're getting visited. That's
great.
And this woman celebrated her 40-year anniversary in our hospice, and I got all the staff together, and I got the, you know, her family was there, and I bought her a cake. I did it like California style.
Yeah.
And we wished her a happy 40 years sober. We all sang to her. She's so happy.
Oh my gosh.
And you know, I paid a lot of attention as she was declining to make sure everything was good for her. And she passed a couple of nights ago, and she was ready.
Yeah.
And she did not fear death.
Yeah.
And wow. That's not always the way it is.
No. No.
You know what I mean? There are some people that suffer because they believe that this separation is more serious than it really is.
Yeah.
You know, one of the promises in the book Alcoholics Anonymous is we will not fear the hereafter.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
And I know you well enough, and you know me well enough to know that, you know, we're not going to be stupid, and we're going to fight if somebody tries to take our life, but you know, it's going to be okay.
Yes.
One time. You know what I mean?
Yeah. It's not one of those things I'm worried about.
No.
It just isn't. There was a time though, you know, it was more just bewildered about it. You know, I have absolutely no doubt in my mind at all. So it's just not even on my agenda as far as, and people have asked me, they, you know, don't you think about that? Not really. I got enough to think about living, right?
you know, the funny thing, Monty, is when I was really miserable, I was afraid of dying.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm really happy now, and I'm not.
Right.
It doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, yeah, that's great.
It's true.
That's great.
We saw that this was no bravado. He really meant it. A little later, Jack again spoke of death. He said that he'd had a wonderful life. Whiskey had brought him great pain, but as a result, AA had given him great joy. With his awakening in AA had come utter conviction, indeed the sure knowledge, that in my Father's house there are many mansions. Everybody there could see that to Jack, death was but a fresh awakening. He never did get to the AA convention. But Jack knew, and we knew, that this didn't really matter, for Jack was in full possession of the greatest gift of all, which Bill started out by telling us is a spiritual awakening.
Yeah, I would agree. I would agree. There's nothing in comparison than to wake up and realize that the arms of the Creator are ready and willing to receive you just like you are. You don't have to get cleaned up to take a bath. You know, yeah. You just don't. And so many people are fighting that, you know, well, I got to change this about me. I got to change that about me, you know, and it's hard for a lot of people to believe that. Just be willing, man. Just be willing. And you will see amazing changes happen in your life. And when they finally see it, wow, what a transformation. Chris, great show, man.
It was fun, Monty.
Yes, indeed. All right, listeners, so next week we're going to be talking. Well, I'm not even going to tell you. We're going to tell you when we get there. It's going to be great. If you've got the book, you know what's coming. If you'd like a copy of the book and you don't know how to get it, simply visit us at take12radio.com and click on Recovery Workshops and walk you through the Language of the Heart. And there you'll find a link, an Amazon link, to the book Language of the Heart. I would highly recommend it. All right. Until our next broadcast, this is the Monty Man along with Chris S., and we are wishing God's perfect serenity for you. For more recovery workshops with Chris S. and the Monty Man, visit our website at take12radio.com and click on the Recovery Workshops banner.
This has been a broadcast of Take 12 Recovery Radio and KHLT Recovery Broadcasting.
This has been a Chicken and a Pig production.
Kitty, 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 kitty. Meow, meow, meow.
Woof, woof.